Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Today I'm going to tell you the story of the shipwreck that ended Astoria's bid to be the Nantucket of the West Coast. When the treacherous Columbia River Bar claimed a fully loaded whaling ship, its owner chalked this up as a very expensive lesson learned and gave up on the plan to hunt whales out of the Oregon seaport, probably just as well considering the popular attitude towards whale hunting today. This story was published in the newspapers on August 8th of 2011. Here we go.
Welcome to Oregon, whale hunting capital of the West Coast!
Doesn't sound like the kind of slogan the state's tourism commission would want to get behind, does it? Yet it came surprisingly close to becoming a true statement, and in fact, if the Columbia River Bar had not been so fearsome, it probably would have. See, the world was a rather different place before March 27th, 1855, than it was afterwards. That was the day a physician-inventor named Abraham Gessner patented a technique for refining petroleum into something he called kerosene. Before that day, if you wanted to see at night, you had two choices of fuel types to burn in your lamps. Cheap, toxic stuff that smoked and stank, and whale oil. Those who could afford it burned whale oil. The whaling industry was huge in America in the 1840s. Ships would embark from Nantucket or from New Bedford, Massachusetts, the city that lit the world, as they called it, and spend years at sea chasing sperm whales all over the Atlantic and Pacific. The South Pacific was especially productive. But the South Pacific was a bit of a long way away from New Bedford, especially in the days before the Panama Canal was even thought about. A ship that had a particularly successful voyage might find itself, with all the barrels in its hold full of whale oil, passing up valuable opportunities on the voyage back around the Horn. It would certainly make sense to have another port on the Pacific coast from which to operate whaling expeditions. At least that's what the owners of the whaling ship Maine thought. So in 1846, the Maine sailed out of its home port in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, on a several-year cruise. The captain was instructed to put in at Astoria, the most well-developed port on the American West Coast at the time. Now, you might be thinking that the logical place to do this would have been San Francisco, but remember, this was 1846. San Francisco was still a Mexican city. Oh, and one other minor thing. The U.S. had just gone to war with Mexico, so San Francisco was out. Seattle? Not even a trading post yet. So Astoria it was. The Maine spent a couple years prowling the South Seas. By the time it was ready to come into port in late August of 1848, its hold was stuffed with 1,400 barrels of whale oil, along with 120 barrels of spermaceti oil. That is the hard waxy substance from the head of a sperm whale, which was used to make top-quality candles. There was also 7 tons of whale bone on board. Probably took at least 30 whales to produce this amount of cargo. The load would be offloaded at Astoria, and some sort of facility set up for handling whale products there. Then the Maine would head out again to fetch more. Well, that was the plan, anyway. Well, at Astoria, the seas were too heavy for the bar pilot to get safely aboard the Maine. So after some time, the skipper of the Maine got tired of waiting. How bad could it be, anyway? No doubt the bar looked perfectly safe to him. He decided to take a chance. Well, one of the things that a bar pilot in those days was supposed to know about was wind shadows. The wind profile at the mouth of the river is rather complicated, and more than one sailing ship has had defeat snatched from the jaws of victory when the wind suddenly shifted or dropped to nothing at just the wrong moment, and this is exactly what now happened to the Maine. Canvas hanging impotently from the yardarms, the heavy-laden ship drifted out to sea at the mercy of the current and in slow motion fetched up on Clatsop Spit. All that could be salvaged was the cooper's shop. The rest of the Maine and her valuable cargo, total loss. Well, that was the beginning and the end of Astoria's bid to become the Nantucket of the Pacific. The ship's owners in Fairhaven were quick to learn the lesson that Astoria was simply too dangerous to be used as a regular base of operations. Perhaps it was just as well. A dozen years later, the new petroleum-based kerosene would be the lamp fuel of choice almost everywhere, although they were actually still burning pig lard as a less expensive alternative to whale oil in the Aquinahead Lighthouse around that time. The whaling industry would be fading into little more than an East Coast maritime memory within a few dozen years. Had Astoria gotten involved, it would have been too late to participate in more than just the sunset years of the whaling industry's golden age. By the 1880s, there were still whaling ships regularly calling at San Francisco and Portland, too, but there was no longer enough money in the trade to make whaling a prestige gig for sailors, and most sailors tried very hard not to end up on one. In fact, deep-water whaling ships made a significant contribution to San Francisco's status as Shanghai capital of the world for many years before that crown was stolen away by Portland just after the turn of the century. Lucky Portland, huh? Astoria made a second foray into the whaling industry, too, much more recently, seeking, among other things, whale oil for the space program. It was an Astoria-area company that launched a whaling venture in 1961. We'll have more details about that, actually, next week on Monday. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.